This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The Tomo VA Medical Center is part of a new program from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs that encourages patients to use alternative therapies for chronic pain. Called Whole Health, the program includes treatments like acupuncture and energy healing in addition to traditional care. The move comes almost 4 years after the death of a veteran at the Tomo VA from a mixture of medication prescribed by doctors there. But the VA is just the latest of regional healthcare providers encouraging patients to use alternatives to painkillers. Joining us now to talk about the Whole Health program are Victoria Brom, director of the Tomo VA Medical Center, Dr. Chris Eberline, Tri-State Medical Director and co-chair of the La Crosse County Heroin and Other Illicit Drug Task Force, and Adam Flood, La Crosse County's Veterans Service Officer. Victoria, how would you describe the Whole Health program? Can you give us just an overview of what that looks like?
Sure. Whole Health is really a change in culture. So it is comprised of multiple tracks, if you will. So one of the tracks is really coming in, getting to know about yourself as in terms of focus on the veteran. So what do you want in your life? What are the goals you want to set and achieve? And then we have a couple of different tracks, one being a clinical track where you can receive mental health services, evidence-based therapy, Pain University, those types of more traditional clinical interventions, and then the more non-traditional in a whole health, biopsychosocial approach in terms of things that you just mentioned earlier, acupuncture, biofeedback, mindfulness, yoga, healing touch, those types of things. So what happens is you come in and you're assessed, you do a self-inventory and work with a whole health coach that stays with you longitudinally, if that's what you prefer, and works out a customized approach to how to live better and the kinds of goals that you want to meet.
So when did this effort from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs kind of get started?
We launched late 2017. We became one of 18 VAs to launch this. We are one of the flagship sites. So we really started collecting data heavily. We got our structure in place to start collecting data about quarter one fiscal year 18, which would be October 2017. Prior to that, we had been strengthening other approaches, like our Pain University approach, really extending our full continuum of mental health care, especially into the intensive outpatient and residential areas, because that seemed to be one of the needs based on our gap analysis. Those, we started about May 2016 in that effort and then kind of complemented it with Whole Health launch in October of 17.
And how was Tomo selected to be one of these 18 flagship campuses?
Well, we were a little bit popular. I'm sure that helped in that time period, but we did a proposal of what we wanted to do. We did a gap analysis in the community in terms of needs and how Tomo VA could be of value. And we did refocus our resources into primary care, long-term care, mental health care, homeless, care of the homeless, and pain. So we refocused and decided this would be our agenda. Met with partners in the community and are trying to fill a gap and a need for veterans. So we applied based on that and our commitment to that and were chosen at the national level.
You mentioned that popularity. I imagine, you know, that it was due to several investigations that found, some problems with overprescribing at the Tomo VA. I wonder how that history has impacted the way that you guys are approaching this and really looking at these goals?
Well, I think it was a huge launch for this initiative. I think we've been talking about it for a while. One of the things we identified when I came on board in October of 16, one of the things we, October of 15 actually, one of the things we identified was that there were a lot of medications for pain, but there were not alternative therapies. So if you were going to reduce a patient's dependence on pain or pain medications, what were we going to offer instead? So that's when we started to look at more intense academic detailing and more oversight and more other alternatives. That's when the Pain University really launched into other modalities, and then we decided that whole health would be a whole nother facet that puts the veteran in the center of things. So, yeah, I think it was a big launch to take. We really had to do something about this issue that we had.
Adam, I wonder what your thoughts are on how
this history of overprescribing at the VA, at the Tomah VA, and you know, some of the issues that have come up in the past, how maybe that has impacted the way people are kind of looking at this new whole health program?
Well, I can't really speak too much about the overprescription. I don't deal with it enough, but it has changed some of the veterans' view. You know, some of the newer veterans who are coming out, they see what used to be a bit of a stigma. So what their new approach is probably a little bit more open to not wanting to go down that path and what is there out there for me and my care rather than actually taking on some of those medications. So I think in some ways it probably has opened up a few veterans to being a little bit more receptive to it. And it probably is changing a little bit of that culture and how they end up receiving care as a whole. It is a little bit newer and some of them are a little more hesitant, but overall, I think when they start being able to see some of the results, it is changing a perspective.
Dr. Everline, you know, as I mentioned in the intro, Tomah VA is not the only healthcare provider that has been incorporating some of these, you know, kind of alternative therapies into treatment. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what's kind of going on in the Gunderson Health System when it comes to these non-traditional care.
Sure. We've been looking at this for a while because as a health system, we've realized, too, that there wasn't a lot of good alternatives, just like Victoria has mentioned. So you had these patients on chronic opiates, but without a good replacement, it was much more difficult to get them off these medications. So we, too, have been looking at alternatives to supplement and to hopefully remove the opiates out of patients' care plans, if possible. Some of the examples, even going down to the pre-hospital setting, we've totally redone our pre-hospital guidelines, looking at the amount of fentanyl that we were giving and realizing that oftentimes fentanyl was given in the ambulance because they didn't have many other options in the ambulance to treat pain. And so we've completely redone that, and they have multiple options for pain now. Obviously, narcotics are oftentimes still a role, but we're also able to do other things. We've even added essential oils into the ambulance system to help with patients' anxiety, pain, nausea, and things like that. So something that is not traditionally done in the pre-hospital setting, and hopefully we see a big effect on the amount of narcotics given.
Are other healthcare systems doing these sorts of things, specifically looking at the pre-hospital setting as a place for you know, kind of these non-traditional medicines?
Not a lot. And we're fairly unique because there's not a lot of pre-hospital systems that are so closely aligned with their hospitals. Most of the country, they're private-run ambulance systems, and they just don't have the same association. So we are on the leading edge of this, and it'll be very interesting to see where this goes. I have a lot of enthusiasm for this project. It literally just rolled out 2 weeks ago, so we'll see. I expect about a 50% reduction in fentanyl usage over the next year is my goal.
You were mentioning earlier that, you know, an ambulance right now is not always the most healing environment.
Not at all. You know, we put you in the back of a ambulance, and before you get in, you get a nice whiff of diesel fume or exhaust in the back, and then you're in this very sterile-like environment. Bleachy smell, plastic smells, and then to top it off, we have you facing backwards out the back door. So all of these kind of add up to not a great healing environment, and a lot of them are you can't fix, but some of them you can. And one of them would be the actual smells in the ambulance, and that's kind of one of the things that we're going to try and focus on with the essential oils and aromatherapy.
What does this look like, you know, in using the essential oils?
Mm-hmm. So we've got cotton balls, and the paramedic, we actually are carrying six different essential oils, and the paramedic will pick one depending on the complaint and what they're trying to accomplish. And we've worked with an expert at Gunderson who kind of set off the program at Gunderson, has been following their essential oil program. She's a nurse, and they will put a few drops on a cotton ball and tape it to your chest. And so it's not an overwhelming, it's not like you're sniffing the cotton ball right under your nose. It's just kind of there, and hopefully we'll block out some of the other smells and we'll get some clinical effects from it.
You mentioned that they are currently using essential oils in Gunderson. Kind of what has been the success of that so far?
They've had pretty good success, actually. They've used it for nausea, and that one always made sense to me because smells are really strongly trigger nausea. And so if we can give you a more pleasant smell, but it's beyond that, it seems. And they've also been using it for pain postoperatively in some patients and have had good success with postoperative orthopedic procedures with it, with some patients using drastically reduced amounts of narcotics compared to those that weren't getting essential oils. So when I heard that, I figured there is a place for this pre-hospital. It's safe, easily done. It won't distract from other treatment measures that we do in the ambulance. And and hopefully as time goes on, we'll see less and less need for some of the narcotics that we're using and still giving the patient the relief that they deserve.
Do you know of other ambulance services that are doing something similar?
Very few. I believe there's one in Minnesota out of the Twin Cities area that has been using them, but we are one of the first in the nation, I believe.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about new efforts at the Tomah VA Medical Center and other regional hospitals to encourage patients to look at alternative therapies for treating pain. We're here with Dr. Chris Eberlein from Gunderson Health System, Victoria Brahm from the Tomah VA, and La Crosse County Veterans Service Officer Adam Flood. Dr. Eberlein, what do you think is driving this effort to look at alternative therapies or alternative treatments?
I think it's just about providing better patient care because we've realized that these opiates aren't always helpful. In fact, as we've seen, tragedy from them, and that we have to treat patients not just their symptoms of pain and hopefully get to the actual root cause of pain and other modalities to treat their pain that don't involve dangerous medications.
Victoria, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about, some of these non-traditional treatment options that veterans have now at the Tomah VA, what those kind of look like.
So one of our most popular, we've had about 400 veterans now go through some of these modalities. I mean, over 1,000 that have gone through the Pain University, but some of the more non-traditional, like the acupuncture. We've had great success so far with about 138 veterans that have experienced our battlefield acupuncture. So although the veteran is assessed at the time they come in for full acupuncture, because it does need to be customized based on where your pain is, the length of pain, all those kinds of things, we have had great luck with the auricular, the ear battlefield acupuncture. At the time that you get the acupuncture, and I've gone down and watched myself several cases. At the exact time you get it, within minutes, there is about a 30% decrease in pain based on 1 to 2 pain levels. From a pain severity of 1 to 10, it drops about 2. But after 1 to 2 days after, it's about a 45% decrease. Now we're doing longitudinal studies to see how long that lasts, because many do come back within 2 or 3 weeks for another, set of acupuncture. So that's one of the ones that's been really successful. We've had great success, too, with the Healing Touch. We do have a Healing Touch integrative clinic, and that we've seen in anxiety, about a 71% decrease in anxiety shortly after. And again, longitudinal studies for that, but the veterans do come back on a regular basis for those types of therapies. Go ahead.
Could you just kind of explain what Healing Touch is for people who aren't familiar with it?
Well, Healing Touch is just it creates an environment where, and I don't do it, so this is just from watching. It is not a physical, it is a trying to balance of energy fields, and it is, you don't actually touch the patient, but near the patient and a calming environment, and these people are trained and certified. I haven't had that certification, so I can't tell you exactly what is said or how it's done. I just know it's in a very calming environment and it's not a physical touch. Mm-hmm. But it works very well with our hospice patients as well.
Adam, you mentioned earlier that you feel like veterans that you talk to are starting to be open to these sorts of treatments. And for many, I think that they would be kind of unexpected in a traditional healthcare setting.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I would actually say there's probably a little bit more hesitancy on those who have been in the healthcare system a little bit longer and have actually received some of those medications. And so I don't know when they go through the pain university if they are expressing a little bit of that hesitation of not wanting to come off of these. But it's a standard for which they've always lived with that they just come to expect that I know how to treat this pain. Where you're starting to see a lot more veterans who haven't quite really gone down that path and are trying to avoid it. So it's just kind of a change of culture on a lot of different aspects of who's getting treatment where and how this is being done. And that change, as you can see with Gunderson kind of coming on, is becoming a cultural change. So with not only TOMA being part of this, but as you're seeing other hospitals across the nation probably start looking into it a little bit more, I think a lot more veterans are getting exposure externally from the VA saying, it's not just the VA trying to do something to me, it's a nation as a whole who's trying to look at this differently. And therefore, if everyone's doing it, maybe I should open up and just give this a try for a little bit.
Dr. Eberlein, what evidence do we have that these sorts of alternative treatments work? I mean, have there been enough studies?
Well, it's something that we need to study more, but there is some evidence out there, and I'm going to speak on the essential oils just because that's the one I've been most familiar with recently because that's the newest one we've added. It's hard to do acupuncture in the back of a moving ambulance. We know from internal Gunderson, they've been using it postoperatively for orthopedic surgeries, and they've had a pretty dramatic reduction in pain and narcotic usage. In fact, there are some patients that post-op day two have received no narcotics for knee replacements, which is pretty amazing when you think about that. Obviously, there were a lot of skeptics. I work with paramedics frequently and first responders, and I too was a little skeptical until I started to look more into it. And when we did our first pilot program, I deliberately picked some of the skeptics of our paramedics and had them be some of the initial crews to go out there and start using them. And despite their skepticism, it wasn't long, and they were seeing effects on patients that they did not expect. Very positive. And so the skeptics have now turned to be very promotional for this program amongst the other paramedics. And that's really important to get a program going. And I think you're starting to see that throughout the healthcare systems, that as we're starting to see an effect of some of these alternative medications and alternative therapies, more and more people come on board because they're seeing they do have a role in patient care.
Victoria, I wonder if there were skeptics at the TOMA VA as well of some of these new treatments.
Well, there are skeptics, definitely, in the veterans. There's, you know, I think I'm shocked at how many actually have jumped on board with that, but I think word of mouth is amazingly successful. We've had some very difficult patients that thought it was a bunch of hooey come in and do aromatherapy and some of those other techniques and then have come out and told their story. In fact, we're trying to get those stories shared because it brings other veterans in. Now, on behalf of the providers, actually, we had a great response to that. We have, I think, 40 providers right now trained in battlefield acupuncture, and it's at all of our community-based outpatient clinics. They were, every class that we have for providers is absolutely full. So they took it really well. But now, again, we are hospital that focuses on primary care and long-term care and that type of thing. So we don't have a lot of intensive surgery and those types of things. So we were, I think, kind of ripe for the model that's being accepted very well by the staff and more and more and more by the veterans. But I think sometimes it really helps for one veteran to hear from another veteran and see the results. This is why we're trying to collect the data, study it very closely. We have an oversight group and a researcher hired just for that purpose because I think the data will then speak for itself.
I wonder if you might share some of the findings of kind of that preliminary data you've collected.
Like I talked about a little bit of the battlefield acupuncture and then some of the anxiety reducing healing touch kinds of things. We do have a lot of data on the Pain University too. We actually have reduced opioids by 41%. Now this is a 2012 data to current, the percentage of veterans that even just receive opioids at the TOMA VA. We've also reduced those receiving greater than 100 morphine equivalent daily doses by another 60%, and then those receiving high doses of greater than 400 by 73%. These are amazing numbers. We've also focused on those that were receiving concomitant therapy of opioids and benzodiazepines, and that's running about 58% decrease. So those are just huge numbers. We have outlier stories, like was referred to by Dr. Eberlein, of patients not using their opioids at all, being totally free of opioids. So these are amazing numbers. We have introduced more oversight in terms of urinary screens, which we do at greater than 97%, and make sure that we have opioid contracts and education so that every veteran makes an informed decision. So those numbers are really amazing, and that's why I think we're definitely going in the right direction.
That's Victoria Brahm, Medical Center Director of the Tomo VA, here with us today to talk about new efforts at the Tomo VA Medical Center and other regional hospitals to encourage patients to look at alternative therapies for treating pain. Also joining us is Dr. Chris Eberlein from Gunderson Health System and La Crosse County Veterans Service Officer Adam Flood. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. We've mentioned the Pain University at the Tomo VA, and Victoria, I wonder if you could just kind of describe what that is and what patients kind of learn through that process.
It's been developed as a university curriculum, if you will. It houses under Whole Health as one of the clinical tracks. So if a veteran chooses to be open to reducing their opioid use, then they go to classes like Pain 101, Pain 102, Pain 201. They're your prerequisites, like your statistics. They go and get informed about what is pain, what is your particular pain, what is it doing to you, the control of the mind, all those kinds of things. And then they choose a pathway, like their electives, and they go down that pathway until they have a plan of care that works for them. Then they graduate. We've had over 1,000 veterans graduate from Pain University, but it's kind of like going back to college and then trying and taking your electives until we find just the right pathway for you. Now, during that course of time, you know, the walls get blurred. You may end up doing something else because we have veterans that have more than may have PTSD on top of their pain, may have other mental health disorders on top of their pain. So make sure that they get that whole approach and may benefit from equine therapy or may benefit from aquatic therapy or something. So that's where that whole health coach makes sure you get all of the different kinds of therapies you need. But specifically for Pain University, it's an education for you to understand your pain and know that it can be dealt with, kind of determine at what level you want to live with your pain, what are the kind of activities you would like to do in your life, where do you want to be, and helping you reach those goals.
Why is it important for a patient to understand their pain and not just their provider?
I think we're trying to move away from the medical model of where a provider tells you what is the best thing for you to one where the veteran takes responsibility for their care. Now, we're still there, and we'll still tell you if you need to know, but it's more of a partnership where this is what I want to accomplish. I do not want to lose 100 pounds. I'll lose 25, but what I really want is the ability to control my pain in my hands so that I can draw. Things like that. So what is it really, what will you do? How can we negotiate goals? So at least we have the best success that we can instead of trying to determine the goals for you that you may or may not have any willingness to meet.
Dr. Eberlein, you know, as a co-chair of the La Crosse County Heroin and Illicit Drug Task Force, you know, I wonder what your thoughts are on, you know, just kind of giving people with an opioid prescription kind of more understanding of what that prescription pain medicine is doing and how other ways to treat that pain. I mean, do you see that as a way of possibly reducing the number of prescriptions?
For sure. And the collaboration that Victoria spoke with about the patient and the provider is key. You have to have good communication between the two to understand, really figure out what the goals of treatment are, how much pain on a daily basis is acceptable, and how to get there. And the other thing that she brought up as far as provider buy-in on this, it really speaks volumes that she's had such good response from her providers. I think most providers have been very hungry for a long time for alternatives to treat their patients' pain. And they either weren't available or weren't accepted, weren't covered by insurance, things like that. And so as we move forward and we have alternatives, you're going to see providers go to those because they have been looking for a long time. But before, you know, you didn't have that many options. And now that you're getting more and more options, you can start to tailor that patient's pain management program to the patient with collaboration along with the patient. That buy-in and that feedback from the patient on what's going to work is really important.
Adam, I want to go to an issue that we've spoken about previously in a previous interview of concern that kind of the eagerness to look at alternatives to pain medications may be a barrier for veterans to access some of these medications. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that and if you've heard from other veterans about this issue.
I've had one or two veterans just kind of have that hesitancy that they might have to go through this program. But those are the ones that I mentioned earlier who have been on these medications. They've had chronic pain. And in a way, I almost go to the aspect of have they given up, that they've just accepted that this is a level of pain and they might not know how to go about it any bit different anymore, that they're hesitant. And so when some of those conversations come up and they struggle with now the doctors are telling them that they should go through this, in some cases I feel that they've stopped listening. They don't want to hear anymore. They just want what's always been. And there are the concerns, and I can't tell them one way or the other. I always address them to go back and to have that conversation with their doctor. But on the flip side, they feel like their doctor is not going to listen to it because they are getting pushed in a direction of trying to bring veterans off of these pain medications. And when I say that is the veterans' outlook, that the physicians are being pushed in that direction. And I just tell them that they need to have those conversations, to have it openly so that they can then start to understand. And that's where, you know, going through the Pain University and going through and understanding what was a level of normal and what could we potentially and what is it that would drive you to that. So some veterans have really opened up in that area outside of physicians, just saying, I don't know, and I don't know if I really want to try.
Victoria, I wonder what your thoughts are on this issue of for those veterans who maybe aren't interested in trying an alternative to pain medications, you know, how do we balance that?
So our approach is the ultimate goal of safe prescribing. So what we've instructed our providers to do is do what is right and what is safe. We have an opioid committee that overlooks, and we have some academic detailing pharmacists, which are pharmacists and professionals that look at what a patient is being prescribed, what is the risk level of that, and do help with difficult cases. There are veterans that will never be off of opioids. We understand that. So there's no hard and fast rule that everybody has to be at zero medication. That will never happen. So what we do is we really try, and what we espouse to is just definitely whatever a veteran is on, let's make sure that it's at a safe level, because we don't ever want to have any more events or unnecessary tragedies.
Dr. Evelyn, I think this issue goes beyond the VA system to healthcare in general of moving forward and looking at these alternatives. How are we making sure that patients are still accessing medications that they might need?
Yeah, it goes down to that, treating the patient's pain, but finding out the right modality to do so. And like Victoria had mentioned, I don't think there's going to be a day when we have no patients on narcotics. There are going to be cases where certain patients are going to need narcotics. But I like to echo what she said, that the point is to make sure that they're on safe levels of narcotics, so we can still give them relief, the combination of narcotics, other modalities, but do it safely so we can avoid these tragedies we're seeing. And we know these opiates on the street oftentimes can get diverted and used by others, or it leads to other drug abuse. 80% of our heroin users started with prescription opioids. So the more we can get those out of our communities, the safer we'll all be.
Dr. Chris Eberlein, Tri-State Medical Director and Co-Chair of the La Crosse County Heroin and Illicit Drug Task Force, is here with us today to talk about a new program at the Tomah VA encouraging patients to use alternative therapies to treat chronic pain. He's joined by Victoria Brom from the Tomah VA and La Crosse County Veterans Service Officer Adam Flood. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on efforts to reduce the use of prescription pain medications in the region. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers. And if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. 4 years after the death of a veteran from medication prescribed by VA doctors, the Tomah VA Medical Center has a new program using alternative therapies for treating chronic pain. Called the Whole Health Program, the new effort by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs has patients explore acupuncture, energy healing, and other treatments instead of prescription medications. It follows a trend among other healthcare providers to offer these kinds of therapies for their patients. Joining us now to talk about alternative treatments for pain are Victoria Brahm, director of the Tomah VA Medical Center, Dr. Chris Eberlein, Tri-State Medical Director and co-chair of the La Crosse County Heroin and Illicit Drug Task Force, and Adam Flood, La Crosse County's Veterans Service Officer. Before the break, you know, Dr. Eberlein, you were talking about how, you know, looking at the opioid prescriptions and the number of opioid prescriptions in the region is key to kind of eliminating some of the other drug use that is, you know, becoming an issue in this region. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what we know as far as, you know, how healthcare providers have played a role in the number of opioid prescriptions we play and how they could play a role in addressing this problem.
Yeah, we've already seen just with education using the prescription drug monitoring program a substantial decrease, 30-40% in opiates already over the last several years. And a lot of that has to stem with the fact that providers are more aware of the problem and they're able to monitor the patient's usage better with programs such as a prescription drug database and looking at more and more alternatives becoming available. So it's not just we're going to take you off narcotics and you're on your own. Now it's, you know, we have these other options that you can do to get your pain under a reasonable level and not be on so many narcotics that ultimately can cause a lot of problems for not only the patient, but our communities as a whole.
Victoria, you know, you mentioned earlier that whole health is not just about these alternative treatments, that there's some other facets to it. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about, you know, the way whole health, you know, kind of goes beyond the physical health needs to also including kind of the mental and emotional health needs of a veteran.
Right, and I think that's why there are the three separate tracks of this and why we have trained employees to be actual whole health coaches because, as Adam said earlier, one of the great things about whole health is I think it helps to reduce the stigma of attracting our veterans into maybe a participating in whole health and not applying for a mental health visit. Or we're finding that still carries a stigma. So when you talk to a whole health coach and you kind of look at What are your concerns? What are your goals in life? How do you transition, especially for our transitioning service members? How do you transition from a life in the military to one, now what is your mission? How do you transition back to your family after what you've seen or experienced? How do you do that? And how do you still stay away from the stigma of mental health? So a whole health coach early on in those transitioning times really helps determine what you need. We have started last weekend, I think we had our first weekender program. It's a transition program for couples, service members coming back and their husbands or wives to come back and try and get used to each other again, understand each other, learn to deal with PTSD. That has been really successful according to the first several, but last weekend, I think, or the weekend before was the first time we ever did it at the Tomah VA campus. So that's just another one. We've worked with PTSD. Fort McCoy has been a wonderful partner. We right now have the only simulator PTSD, combat PTSD, simulator treatment. It's an exposure therapy to help veterans readdress what their issues are and then be able to deal with them. And that's been pretty exciting too. We'll be having data published on that soon. We have our MST, our military sexual trauma, we have a military sexual trauma unit for female veterans, the only one in the region right now, because that has been identified as a huge issue, not only for females, but for males as well, about 40% having military sexual trauma as well, but a secure, psychologically safe place. So we've built buildings on campus. We have 173 acres, a beautiful campus. So we have residential programs like that where you can spend some time in a holistic, calm environment and overcome your substance abuse or your military sexual trauma or your PTSD or many other mental health ailments, schizophrenia, dual diagnoses. So we have all those different tracks and professionals, and then we have intensive outpatient programming now to follow you into the community to keep you on track and help you sustain. So the whole continuum is a key, so that you can come in, be assessed for whatever kind of services you need. The other thing, as Dr. Eberlein has mentioned, I think is very good is to partner with the community, because we also have veterans that are seen in the community and seen with the VA. So it's really important that we're communicating, especially with these mental health disorders or substance abuse disorders. The Wisconsin State Database has been wonderful. We participate in that as well as many private sector hospitals, and our physicians have to check 100% of every encounter, check that database, so that if veterans are being prescribed opioids or mental health medications, we're aware of them and can adjust so that we reduce the risk of overdose and things like that as well.
Adam, as someone who works with veterans and you know, hears their needs, I wonder what your thoughts are on this idea of trying to make treatments and resources more of a whole health kind of spectrum approach.
I think it's a great initiative. I mean, as a veteran myself, there are different things that I would like to try rather than trying to get to the medication. And so, I look at it more of a generational type of thing and how long has somebody been on it. But these initiatives to get veterans to not just to show up to an appointment and listen to a doctor and hear what they're saying and then take that, but to get that veteran engaged in what their care is and how do they want to see it and what do they want to do. I think the more that you can engage somebody on that, the better off everyone's going to be, just because the conversation is there for then the physician to know what is a goal that we're going to try and achieve to by listening to the veteran. And the veteran on the flip side is going to then hear, can I get back to that? What was my normal and how close can I get back to being in that area? So having these initiatives is a great way to at least start stemming out and finding new ways of doing it. And luckily, veterans have the VA. A lot of insurances aren't going in the direction of being able to cover that, at least that I'm aware of at this point. So in a way, veterans are a guinea pig in a way of saying, how can we prove to society that this might be the best way of treating a lot of things? And, you know, veterans are at least becoming a little bit more open, but I do think it's generational. I think today's veteran and hearing what's in the news and everything are a little bit more open to that than, say, veterans who are a little bit older and have only known a certain model of care.
Dr. Eberlein, do you have thoughts on how we get, you know, people of different generations who might be skeptical?
Attacking the stigma of mental health and drug abuse is really key. To move forward, we have to treat the mental health with the drug abuse. And as we have more success and word of mouth, these veterans will hear from other veterans that have been successful, and that's really how you're going to bring them in, is demonstrating success with their peers.
Dr. Eberlein, I also want to ask you about this issue of insurance, you know, outside the VA, patients who are not veterans, you know, do their insurance usually cover these sorts of therapies?
Some do, some don't, and it also depends on the length of therapy and things like that. But that is why what the VA is doing, I think, could demonstrate for the rest of us and be really important for evidence, because everyone's looking for evidence-based treatments. And once we have evidence-based treatments, and if they have good success to their programs, it'll be very easy to convince insurance companies, and well, this is best practice. It's evidence-based. It gets patients off of narcotics and ultimately it would save money.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about new efforts at the Tomo VA Medical Center and other regional hospitals to encourage patients to look at alternative therapies for treating pain. We're here with Dr. Chris Eberlein from Gunnarsson Health System, Victoria Brom from the Tomo VA, and La Crosse County Veterans Service Officer Adam Flood. Victoria, it's been almost 2 years since the last time we had you here on Newsmakers. So we had you here in 2016. And during that conversation, you know, you talked about some of your goals of improving staff morale, addressing a culture of fear that had been kind of reported at the medical center previously, as well as reopening the acute psychiatric inpatient unit. And I just wonder if you could kind of catch us up on kind of what's been going on at the Tomo VA since the last time we talked with you.
Oh, yes, we've come a long way. You know that saying, you come a long way, baby? Well, we have. So actually, we opened the acute psych unit shortly after that in July, so that we are running 11 beds, and we are very busy. We have we were a three-star hospital in quality based on the SAIL database that the VA uses to determine quality. We are now a four-star, and we have now risen. We were at 77 when I came, 77th rank out of the 129 VAs. We are now 35 and projecting 23 in our next set of data. So we are in quality of care quadrant one, which is the best you can do. So we have come a long way in terms of the quality of care that we do. The staff morale is rising and rising. I have data in front of me, but things like psychological safety has risen tremendously. Things like trust in senior leadership has risen tremendously. I see my supervisor more visible to me. I feel like I can promote innovation. Since I last talked to you, we've hired a full-time innovation specialist, a full-time researcher. We have started a psychiatric residency program, and we're launching a psychology residency program and hoping to get our own resource board to be publishing research out of the Tomo VA. Since we really are doing so many new and exciting things, it would be really important to get these down, documented, and shared. So all those things are happening, you know, really exciting. I'm having a great time now. I think we're past the tragedy and moving forward and helping so many veterans now that I think we're on our way. I think there's room to grow. We're not there yet, but we've made tremendous leaps and bounds.
Adam, I wonder if you've heard a change among veterans and their families about their thoughts on the Tomo VA.
It's actually kind of interesting. When everything was going on with the tragedy that took place, there were actually a lot of veterans who stepped up and said, you know, unfortunately, Toma's getting a bad rap. A lot of them did not come forward and tell me specifically that everything's true, that Toma deserves everything they're getting. They were quite opposite. They said, my level of care is great. You know, unfortunately, there's been a lot of transitions. Some of the physicians had left, and that was one of the bigger things, is a lot of veterans then started talking about how that continuum of care kind of got interrupted. But overall, veterans in this area, I think, are very supportive of Toma, the level of care that they're able to receive, the access. They're starting to understand a little bit more that where Toma's trying to go, that Toma is going to outsource the things that they don't do as well. And I think that building of trust and everything within other medical facilities in the community brings a veteran back to just staying in this local area. Before, it was driving them out to potentially Madison, the Twin Cities, for that. And the veterans didn't feel comfortable with needing to make that travel and everything. So I can't say that from what I heard in the past that a lot of veterans were having a hard time with it, but I do see that they continue to grow and understand more of Toma, and I think there's a lot more liking to being able to get to the VA more than what may have been in the past.
Adam, what do you think veterans in this area need from the VA, but also from other resources? Are there needs that you maybe kind of hear consistently?
With some of the areas that could be a little bit more addressed is really actually when a veteran has some of their services, like a surgery. They have X amount of visits for that follow-up, and then I think after they're able to go through some of the physical therapy, they have difficulty in finding the next step. And so some of them have watched their rehab take a little bit of a step back as they're trying to make a transition, if there is one. That's where some difficulty comes in on, you know, will they go under private health care insurance? Will the VA be able to pick it up? Those are some of the bigger areas that I every now and then still hear a little bit more concern on. But other than that, you know, I think a lot of veterans do feel comfortable with the level of care. But part of that is also the veterans now understanding what level of care they're going to be able to receive, where a lot of veterans in the past had projected out what they thought was going to be there for them.
Victoria, I wonder if you could talk about, you know, what are next steps for the TOMA VA, especially given with the whole health program? You know, what's kind of coming next as you collect more information on how, you know, patients are responding to this program?
So, of course, we'll be expanding Whole Health. We hope to move into a brand new Whole Health Center in December of this year in one of our buildings. We also are focusing very much on extending our more intensive outpatient management of mental health disorders so that we can help veterans be in the community and live optimally with these disorders. So we have launched two teams, one focusing on PTSD and one on substance abuse. We will be launching several more teams that can follow to get veterans out of the inpatient or the residential settings. We are going to, I hear there is a nonprofit agency very interested in reopening our golf course, which, you know, when I first came here, I think I heard more from veterans about opening that golf course than I did about their health care. So we've been working diligently on trying to, I'm hoping that happens. We use it for therapy, but I think it's a very great morale booster for those veterans that are on site, you know, 24/7. We will continue to focus on expansion. We are very much needing to penetrate higher into our veteran population in terms of primary care in La Crosse, Wausau, and Wisconsin Rapids. So we are vigorously trying to move up the timeline of our new community-based outpatient clinics there. We've pretty much filled the house of the ones that are existing. So we have plans on building new clinics in each of those areas or expansion of clinics in each of those areas. And in terms of long-term care, we have just launched two new small homes, which will allow 20 more veterans to live in somewhat of a luxury setting. It's a home away from home to live out their lives in a very home-like setting. So those are targeted by August of next year to be opened. We already have two, but two more. Then we've done the environmental scan, so we intend to change our whole environment to be one of this healing, peaceful environment. So it's kind of a get away, heal from whatever your issues are, and then, you know, live your life to the best of your ability.
Dr. Everline, you know, Tri-State is kind of just rolling out this new program using essential oils. But, you know, kind of what do you see as next steps, you know, once you start to see kind of the evidence behind this treatment for Tri-State and for Gunderson?
Continue to expand the programs and make sure that we keep patient safety and comfort at the forefront. And that's really, really what this is all about. And, you know, this opiate problem is community-based, and we have to make sure that the communities have input in what we're doing. You know, it's a community hospital. We have to work together, and mental health is a very big issue, and access to care and treatment programs and prevention. I mean, it's so multifaceted that it's going to take years for our communities to continue to work on it. But even in the last few years, we've seen incredible strides just by the sheer numbers of opiate reduction in our community. And patients are still getting good care, and they're still getting their pain treated despite having a reduction in opiates. And that's very promising, and we'll continue to work as a community in hospitals and ambulance services and see where we go from here.
Is there conversation happening between Gunderson? I know that Mayo Clinic Health System also has some of these alternative treatments available in the La Crosse area. You know, is there a conversation happening among healthcare providers about these sorts of treatments?
Yeah, we talk frequently about it and what's working and what's not. And a lot of us are really waiting on more evidence and research coming out on these treatments. So we really know where to focus, you know, which patient should go to what modality is what we're looking at.
Yeah, Victoria, I wonder, you know, how much conversation and kind of looking to other healthcare systems doing these sorts of things went into developing the whole health program?
We do try and stay very close to our partners, especially, you know, Marshfield, Mayo, Gunderson. We've always had a good partnership with Gunderson. Just recently, Mayo has signed a provider agreement with us, and that means that we will be able to send patients to Mayo as well on a provider agreement, which is very quick. We'll be able to call and make an appointment right away. Prior to that, you know, there was none there because of some previous issues with choice. But now we have opened up that door, so we're thinking that'll be an even stronger relationship. We absolutely need our partners, and we actually need to know what's going on when we share patients. It's integral. We're also working on better communication systems in terms of sharing of the medical records and those types of things. So I know the VA is working on having a program that would be more seamless so that when we have a veteran in one of the private sector hospitals that we can share those records back and forth more easily. Right now, a veteran has to opt in, and then we can see those records. And we're trying to streamline that and advocate for legislation that would just allow that to automatically and seamlessly happen with private sector hospitals where the veteran resides, and they would be able to see our records as well.
We've been talking with Victoria Brom, director of the Toma VA Medical Center, Dr. Chris Eberlein, Tri-State Medical Director and co-chair of the La Crosse County Heroin and Illicit Drug Task Force, and Adam Flood, La Crosse County's Veterans Service Officer, about a new effort among healthcare providers to encourage patients to use alternative therapies for treating chronic pain. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at WPR.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at WPR.org/newsmakers.